phone and listen. We got suggestions on the Bird Talk Radio. If your bird's misbehaving, we'll help you save it on the Bird Talk Radio. If your bird's getting rowdy, just call and say howdy on the Bird Talk Radio. We are birds of a feather. We'll stick together on the Bird Talk Radio. Come on and listen. We got suggestions on the Bird Talk Radio. If your bird's misbehaving, we'll help you save it on the Bird Talk Radio. If your bird's getting rowdy, just call and say howdy on the Bird Talk Radio. We are birds of a feather. We'll stick together on the Bird Talk Radio.com.
Do you feel parrots and other birds deserve protection under the law? Dogs, cats, and horses have them, so why don't birds? Legislative Rights for Parrots is a nonprofit organization working with all states and also at the federal level, and we need your help. We can write the bills for you. We just need help reaching your state politicians to support our bills. We support parrot ownership. Yet with the number of bird flippers, non-reputable bird rescues, breeders, and pet stores that do not need to meet a minimum of care, we feel a standard of care must be outlined in law, just like for cats and dogs. If you're able to help us in your state, contact us at 1-833-HELP-LRP. That's 1-833-HELP-LRP or 833-435-7577. We do not ask for financial donations, just your time and passion to help these intelligent, social, beautiful creatures.
Bird Talk, live online. I'm your host, Mike Kiger. Guess who I have connected? You'll never guess. You might. April Miller from Legislative Rights for Parrots. And I'm still adjusting volume levels here and all that good stuff, so bear with me. April is a board member on LRP and does all kind of great work and lots of work to help rescues and bird orgs and anybody with a pet bird is having a problem. I'm telling you, this lady has done it all, and she has extensive experience with law and animal, you know, legislation and all that complicated stuff. You know, she is involved with LRP and helping to write laws for the basic standards of health care for pet birds in every state in the USA, so that all pet birds can have a fighting chance by law to have a healthy place to live, wherever they live, you know, in your home, in a rescue, in a, you know, some bird organization, a zoo, whatever, wherever they live, LRP are working to make sure that those birds have a healthy place to live, a place where they can thrive and be successful as a bird, right? And I was just talking to April before we went live, and she was telling me, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say, you know. But on the phone, when I talked to her and when we're in chats and meetings at LRP, she has plenty to say. But, you know, like a lot of people, you don't know what to say. You don't know what to say when you're live on air. I don't always know what to say. But we're going to talk about April Miller's bird love right now. That's what we're going to talk about. And her work with LRP, with Legislative Rights for Parrots. Are you there, April? We'll start all over. Live from Kansas City. I love saying that. And April and listening audience.
I'm here.
This is April Miller from Legislative Rights for Parrots. One of the, as long as I've been involved with LRP, listening audience, April is like the heartbeat of LRP. She just keeps it going. She's the brains, pretty much. Casey has brains too, but she's more like subtle and laid back, and she's just kind of in the background making sure everything happens. You know, April's out there in the front, like, you know, leading the charge of this organization, and it's really, really awesome. And April has a lot of pet bird experience. She's done a lot of work with bird orgs and rescues and legislation and everything you can imagine in the realm of helping, you know, make things work well for our feathered loved ones. Right, April?
Yeah, there's our whole goal. Our whole goal is to make sure that parrots are seen equivalent to cats and dogs when it comes to the law, and that their cases don't get just pushed aside and ignored because it's the common saying, just a bird.
Talking about earlier.
Sure. I'm the executive director of the board for LRP. Easy way to say I delegate all the fun stuff Casey thinks up. Casey is amazing president. When she comes up with something, it's kind of my job to delegate out to where it goes. But since we're newly formed and we're still a small org that's growing, I kind of carry multiple hats. So while I'm officially the executive director, I am also the team coach for two different factions or teams, as we call them, one in Michigan and one in Arizona, who are starting to kick off their own feet on the ground to be the foot soldiers or the activists there to protect parrot rights. So I also do video editing. I talk to legislative representatives. I talk to court justices. When we have crises in Michigan or elsewhere with sanctuary closures or sudden seizures of birds, I a lot of times get a call and I'm the one spearheading contacting people in the chain to try to make sure those birds get home. Kind of, I wear a bunch of hats right now, and I delegate where I can. Sometimes, maybe not enough, but that's kind of what I do. A lot of it's also education, educating people about what the law is, but educating our board members about what we would call legalese is, and other people. Legalese meaning it's a term of art. So sometimes there's words we use in everyday conversation that mean something very specific when written in a legal contract or a legal document. And so you have to be very careful with commas and ands and ors and all sorts of little minute things that in everyday conversation might not be a big deal, but when writing a law means one thing or something completely different by the simple moving of a comma of how it's interpreted. So you have to be really careful with that. And so that's kind of what I do. I've helped rewrite some laws with Casey, and that was given to a senator in Nevada who looked over them and said it was good. I actually went up to a writer, I believe, in D.C. to look at it as well. And so now we're working on getting data, because regretfully, like I said, people see it as just birds and have this attitude that they're not equivalent to other companion pets, which means there's not a lot of research. And when there's not a lot of research, there's not data. And when there's not data, it's really hard to convince senators and representatives, city council people, and that there's a problem. They want to see the numbers. They want to see the financial cost. They want to see all that data. And so that's the next part. We're having to work on writing legislation and, you know, gathering data. And it's a lot of hands-on work. There's been times I've went 3 days without sleeping, not because anyone made me, but we were in the middle of some crises with a bunch of back-to-back seizures in Michigan, along with what I do every day. So kind of meant 3 days of staying up till we got everything.
I remember. And I turned the mic down while you're talking, so it doesn't feedback But I remember the 3 days you were up over that issue.
Yeah, we had 3 seizures happen in Michigan back to back to back, and then after that, the OKC, the Oklahoma City seizure happened. So here we had 2 in the same county. One had 20 animals involved, and they were all birds. And the other one had 123 animals in total and a very small house. I believe maybe a 2-bedroom ranch. It's very tiny. I was hoping to get the worker on today, the animal control worker, but she's working. So I believe I couldn't get them in time. Very amazing worker there. Went out on a call about bunny rabbits. That's how this second call started. It was over bunny rabbits. And when she pulled up,
a
she
complaint,
said she could smell an
a
odor.
Complaint about the situation.
Mistreatment
the
of
rabbits
bunny rabbits.
Are in.
Yes. And so that's why she went. She thought this was dealing with rabbits. That were loose and maybe didn't look in the best of care. And she got there and said she could smell the odor from the yard. There are certain things I cannot tell because this is in serious litigation right now. I can tell you the cages were uninhabitable. I can tell you that the animal control worker had never seen a hoarding case or the conditions of the home so bad in her entire career. I can say that the rescue groups that went there from 2 different rescues were horrified. They were told on the way up there would be 60 birds. Only 48 came out. Of the 48, they are all living, but one, we only lost one. Due to starvation, I believe, but they are thriving with a rescue right now, but they are proceeding forward on litigation, not just for the bunnies or the dogs and the cats in the house, but on the parrots. Actually, it was really amazing in this horrible situation. All the news broadcasters actually looked at parrots first, which normally doesn't happen. Parrots in an abuse neglect situation normally get thrown in the et cetera pile. So it's like cat, dog, et cetera. They don't even get names or labels. This time in both these seizures, which were in St. Clair County, Michigan, they were labeled first as parrots, then dogs and cats,
mm-hmm.
et cetera.
Because,
so the
because
fact
the,
that we
there's
got
no laws in place
abuse.
And no procedures that are planned ahead of time, and animal control, they don't know how to proceed, right? Because there's nothing for them to proceed with as far as, you know, listening audience. I think what I'm trying to say and what she's getting at, what April's getting at, is animal control go by local statutes, state laws, federal laws, according to animals. And when they have those laws in place, they develop guidelines and procedures according
Correct.
To those laws about how to handle these incidents, right? Where there's,
Correct.
You know,
yes,
lots of animals that have to be recovered
evidence.
And moved into situations Correct. Where they can be kept in healthy, you know, situation. And you know what, April? We're going to move on with this. I don't want to interrupt your train of thought, but I was talking to Logan last night, and he said something that just kind of stunned me. I was like, yeah, really? That makes sense. He said that he doesn't know of any rescue that started with a bad intention or any person. He said,
Correct.
I don't believe anyone intends to abuse or neglect an animal. That most of this, these hoarding, what we call hoarding situations, or situations where these animals end up in a horrible situation where they seem neglected. I think
the word is circumstantial. And not trying to let anybody off the hook for neglect, intentional neglect, or people that are, you know, crowding animals together for profit and intentionally not taking care of them to keep their expenses down. But, you know, Logan, I think basic human nature is, you know, we intend to do well in a situation. I think a lot of these organizations get started and their intentions are good, but they don't have a plan. They don't have resources to take care of when the situation goes bad, when they get too many animals all of a sudden. They don't have enough money to feed them. Their facility's not large enough. They take in a bunch of these animals thinking that, you know, their donors will contribute to offset, you know, the situation and make it right, and it doesn't happen. Am I on the right track?
I would say it's a little more complicated. I agree there is a group that is their situation, but there's some other people that's not the case. I would agree when you're talking about a lot of animals in the location, if they start as a rescue or a sanctuary, yes, a lot of times that's exactly what happens. Multiple things can happen. Life can happen. The owner becomes deathly ill, the owner's spouse, the owner's children, and all the money gets drained trying to take care of an illness. Well, they pass away, and now the donations aren't there. They start off not understanding that literally, if you're a rescue, you can't bank on donations. You've got to be doing a job outside of your rescue that's supporting that rescue on your own. The donations are a bonus. They cannot account for what you're doing. And yes, I agree that you have to have a plan. You have to limit how many animals you can afford on your own without donations. When those things don't happen, or people think, I'm going to get into this and make money, is where we get into the problem of too many animals they're under. But we've also seen this thing of, and I'm going to say it is also human nature, pride. I have run into numerous rescues where LRP has offered to help turn them around. Like, they started out good. Something happened, a family crisis. They got overwhelmed when a bunch of people relinquished animals all at once and never get under it. But something goes awry, but they're salvageable. And that's what I'm saying. I think there's different situations. Some rescues get over their head and can be salvaged. The problem we found a lot of times is they're too afraid to ask for the help or accept the help because they think the rest of the art community is going to look down on them for accepting the help.
Afraid they're going to get in trouble or the community will turn against them or something like that.
Correct. So instead of taking the help of, hey, we'll come clean up your place from top to bottom, help you get, you know, back on your feet and get this rolling again, they refuse the help, which leaves the animal still not in a good position, which also leaves that rescue now at risk of being cited for neglect and abuse. More neglect, not so much abuse, but neglect. And you lose a great rescue, which you really need, because we have more birds needing space than rescues have openings. And so anytime you lose a good rescue, for whatever reason, or sanctuary, it hurts big time. So I have that group. I do have my group who are hoarders who have mental health issues. And hoarding is actually a mental health issue. So then you have that group of hoarders where it's not they started as a rescue. It's that they saw the animal, and for some reason in their mind, they believe they can care for it better than anyone else. And this keeps happening with every animal they get in their possession. And they feel like they can't relinquish them because no one else can care for them like they do. It's not realizing that the level of care is not earned.
Like
yes.
an over-obsession with the tendency to care for a bunch of animals.
Correct. And so what happens is with that group, the unique thing I've seen with them, and I've been helping at shelters since I was little, and I remember this one woman, and it does not deal with a parrot. It was dogs. There was a large seizure in her home. She had a trailer. She had, I believe, 68 dogs. It was 60-something dogs, and then there were cats, guinea pigs, and rabbits. She called every shelter in every county in Pennsylvania to locate two of those dogs because they'd recently had surgery, and she was afraid no one realized they needed to be on antibiotics. That's the second group. They care about the animals. They love them. They have a mental health disorder. And if not treated, it will happen again. With that group in Michigan, we've been very lucky. At least they've seen it in most counties. When you run into the mental health situation, not that they skip jail time. I'm not saying that happens. But they do bring in adult services to check and have them checked out for mental health issues to make sure we're treating the true problem. Because if all you do is throw someone in jail that has that mental health disorder, they're just going to come out and do it again because they have no coping mechanisms. The compulsive behavior has
it's
not
just
been addressed.
The way their mind works. So jail isn't going to correct that. Right.
No. And with Michigan, we were lucky they just passed some new laws dealing with hoarding and dealing with animals. Parrots are now covered as companion animals, and that you can't have that situation. Then we have my last group of people. And those are the ones I hate to say, and I know we want to think everyone is a good person.
Careful.
And trust me, before going to law, I wanted to believe everybody was a good person. But some people, due to their upbringing, due to mental health issues, due to something in their brain that goes awry.
Desire for profit.
That's not what happens. And with that group, I see when they're getting birds, it's to flip them for money immediately. They will drug them to make them look healthy. They will hoard them in tight cages. That's a whole different group than my hoarders who care about animals or my rescue that something went wrong and we can't get it. We feel like we're stuck underneath and can't ask for help. That's a whole different class. Now, in Michigan, again, I've been blessed. In March, the law became active for that group of people and some other ones where we might not have the hoarding aspect. They have increased the sentencing to 7 to 10 years on abuse and neglect of an animal. And the reasoning why is valid. If many people might not know that veterinarians are required reporters of abuse and neglect of animals or of a person that walks into their building. Why? Because animal abuse is normally a sign of domestic violence or possibly more serious problems. Based on the grounds of protecting women and children, they increased the penalty level and put degrees on killing and torturing, just like a human, first degree, second degree, third degree. The first degree is if you use the animal to emotionally harm a human being. Meaning, if I'm holding your parrot and threatening to hurt it to get you to comply, that's a first degree. If you kill that parrot, if you injure that parrot, it's a first degree of torture. And you're looking at a heftier sentence because the answer is they're using the animal as a weapon against the human. And if they're willing to do that to the animal that is considered a companion, intelligent, then they're willing to do it to the human being. And therefore the animal should be treated as equivalent. And so we have seen a jump up. Michigan also took a really big step, really big. It's not perfect yet, but this was huge, and included pet stores and breeders in the abuse and neglect chargeability now. Before, it was only owners or individuals. You couldn't charge a breeder for abuse and neglect, for overbreeding a bird, etc. You couldn't charge a pet store, and they expanded what pet store means. It's not just a brick-and-mortar pet store, like I go to Susie's Pet Store downtown. No, it's any place where you're exchanging items for value, whether that's money or bird for bird. You're considered a pet store seller, a seller of a pet. So that will help target people like the flippers, that last group, to shut them down. So Michigan has made some strides forward. Our biggest fallback is financial ability to pay for more workers in animal control. While Michigan's animal control is county run, we only maybe have 1 to 2 workers per county, and that's not enough. That's not, and they're not there every day of the week. They're there limited hours. So we really, the financing part is very difficult. And without that, you can't arrest, which means we don't prosecute. And then that person continues. But we have taken some strides in Michigan that I'm hoping to see we can spill over. Like today I saw Colorado did something, Michigan did an its new law. Colorado has banned a person who's been convicted of animal abuse for ever owning an animal again. In Michigan, if you're a repeat offender, you may never own an animal. You are 5 years plus of probation and pretty much won't own an animal for the rest of your life.
Justifiably so. Yeah.
Now, yes. They can allow them under circumstances. Colorado finally hit the hammer down it. None at all. Michigan's not at none of all, but is getting close to that. So there are strides being made before LRP existed. Now, we want to push them a little further. Now, the one thing I want to say is every time someone hears push it further, I hear the kickback of, but you're going to come take my bird away. No. What if my water's dirty? No. What if it didn't have food the minute they showed up? You have to understand that animal control does not have time to chase down squabbles. They're not going to show up unless you're doing something that requires them to show up. And they're not going to slate you and take your bird because it didn't have beautifully fresh water that moment. We're talking animals whose beaks have been busted, have intentionally had their wings snapped. We're talking abuse. We talk neglect. For those who saw the photos out of OKC that were in the New York Times, we're talking that. We're talking feces deep in the cage. We're talking clearly didn't have fresh water for a week. People get really worried that we're trying to steal their birds. That is no one's intention. Our intention, though, was to get these people off the streets who are drugging birds, who are intentionally abusing birds, and who are not paying for their crimes simply because for so long there has been this distinction of cats and dogs get one level of acknowledgement and birds, well, no big deal. We want to push them up to the same level as cats and dogs. Not take anyone's animals, but stop some of the abuse. And if you've ever been to a rescue and talked to some of these people and seen the conditions that some of these birds have been in, and I wish I could tell you more about that hoarding situation that's under investigation and going to court, you would understand what I'm talking about. I get really concerned when people don't want to advocate because they're so afraid we're going to steal your bird. It's kind of ridiculous, and I laugh at it partially because I have 15 birds. It'd be kind of stupid of me to advocate to take birds away when I have 15 birds myself. So we're not here to take anyone's birds. We want to give them the same status as every other companion pet. We want them to be protected from these people who buy them and intentionally abuse them, starve them. I mean, starve them. We've seen water black as night, starved, no food. Feces 2 inches in cages. I've seen photos from OKC. That's what we're talking about. Serious abuse and neglect. Not, I ran out to the store and I came back and he didn't have fresh water. That's not what we're talking about at all. We're talking about true abuse and neglect. I just worry because people shy away because they have a misconception of what we're trying to do.
Do you feel parrots and other birds deserve protection under the law? Dogs, cats, and horses have them, so why don't birds? Legislative Rights for Parrots is a nonprofit organization working with all states and also at the federal level, and we need your help. We can write the bills for you. We just need help reaching your state politicians to support our bills. We support parrot ownership. Yet with the number of bird flippers, non-reputable bird rescues, breeders, and pet stores that do not need to meet a minimum of care, we feel a standard of care must be outlined in law, just like for cats and dogs. If you're able to help us in your state, contact us at 1-833-HELP-LRP. That's 1-833-HELP-LRP or 833-435-7577. We do not ask for financial donations, just your time and passion to help these intelligent, social, beautiful creatures.